Marjorie Hines-Willicutt with us, and we're going to come back in a moment and take your calls as we continue chatting with her about the awakening of a scientific mind. And welcome back, Marjorie Hines-Willicutt with us, of course. Marjorie, so when you wrote the book, Infinite Awareness, what compelled you to write this story?
I think that the word compel is very important. Something made me really want to try to figure out how to put these two halves of my life together, and I didn't know how to do it any other way than to start writing and to really start doing the research so that I could go ahead and figure out how to integrate the two halves of my life. And I found that it really actually worked. I found that after doing the research, I began to expand my own understanding of science, and I began to say that maybe the scientific box that I had been living in was a little bit too narrow, and maybe if I just expanded it a little bit, it could also hold an awareness that might be beyond that of just the neurons in our brain.
And based on everything that you have studied, what is your biggest conclusion about all of this?
I think that truly we do have access to an awareness that is much bigger than ourselves. And we can become much more creative people when we actually access that awareness. We also can be much more loving because we aren't in a contracted state where we feel separate from everybody else. So I think that if one does do something like meditation, and those people that have had near-death experiences can go back into that state through quieting their mind in meditation, we find that it is a very powerful way to be a much better human being in all ways, including our care for each other and also our own creativity in our jobs and our careers.
Did you come across anything that surprised you or shocked you in your research?
Yes, I think what really shocked me was the power of our human mind to affect our bodies. I remember that one of the sets of experiments that I look at in the book is related to hypnosis, and I knew nothing about hypnosis. I remembered hypnosis as a child as sort of like a parlor trick that you did where you tried to get somebody to do silly things. And then I looked at the research that is out there on hypnosis and how they use hypnosis to cure genetic diseases, and I was blown away. I mean, one example is something called ichthyosis, which is a genetic disease where you have a skin that looks almost like fish skin. It's very horny and it's hard, and the person has bleeding all the time when they move their joints because the skin is so hard. And they used hypnosis on this one boy who was 16 years old, and they had sent him to a hospital to have skin grafts. That hadn't worked. Nothing else had worked. And within a short period of time with hypnosis, all of that bad ichthyosis skin went away, and there was this beautiful pink skin underneath that came out, and he was like 90% cured of that genetic disease through hypnosis. And they followed him 4 years, and it never went back again to that original state.
It is remarkable that how you tune into this through meditation primarily. I also found that positive thinking makes this work better as opposed to being negative about it. Have you, was that part of your research, the positiveness about this?
It is, and it's an interesting, almost a circular thing, because when people meditate, they've actually shown that it is a different part of their brain, which is related to much more positive, contented thinking that begins to take over. And they also have been shown, of course, as you say, that if you think positive thoughts, it also affects your brain. So you have a very circular phenomenon that meditation helps you think positively, and then continuing to think those thoughts really expands the way you act in your day, and you become a much nicer person for yourself and for others.
All right, let's take some calls here for you. We'll go to Lorenzo in Stevensville, Montana to get things started. Lorenzo, thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, George, for
sure thing.
Bringing me on the air. I just wanted to speak to your guest about meditation. I got some experiences to bring to the table because I've been practicing for like almost 40 years now with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi's Transcendental Meditation TM City program, where we actually got together in huge groups of thousands of people practicing the TM City program together under the same roof called the Domes at Maharishi International University. And we actually got together back in the winter of 1983, the summer of 1983, and it lasted for 5 weeks up through January 1984, where we had 10,000 meditators and yogic flyers practicing together under the same roof. And Maharishi Mahesh Yogi actually showed up for that experience, and it was a really powerful, exhilarating experience. And I just wanted to offer that to our guest and see what she had to say about her experiences, maybe with DM or yogic flying, or, you know, I could elaborate on that.
All right.
If she wants to know a little bit
any
more
experience
about
there, Marge?
Well, first of all, I would say that I agree with you that when you get a lot of people meditating together, it can be very powerful for everyone in the group. I think that it's almost like it's that state of stillness is contagious, and that state of more expanded awareness is contagious. So I think it's beautiful what was being done there, and I think that people really find transformation from meditating with other people as well as meditating alone. And I just want to also add that I appreciate all of the research that has been done at that university on meditation. I know a lot of the studies that I quote are from the researchers at that university doing very interesting studies on improvement, for example, in heart disease and things like that with meditation. Meditation is very powerful healing, has very powerful healing effects, I would say.
All right, back to the calls. We go to April in Monroe, New Jersey, first-time caller. Hello, April.
Hi, good morning. Good morning. I wanted to call because I found that this show is very, very compelling. When I was a young girl, I'm 56 now, my younger sister would speak to my mother in very concerned conversation. She was trying to find her Chinese grandmother. And my mother, who has a very open and loving spirit, would say, "What are you talking about? Who are you looking for?" And what my mother determined was that my sister was very concerned because my sister was expressing, that there were military men. They were in the village, they were at the house, and she couldn't find her grandmother. And my mother, after a lot of conversations and time had passed with these conversations with my sister, determined that this experience that my young sister, I'm talking like 3 years old, was trying to communicate to my mother, had to do with a revolutionary period. Military men coming to the house. There was, she talked about like, explosions, trying to explain this to my mother, and she had this fear and desperation to find her grandmother. I am completely convinced of reincarnation, and what I feel is that the spirit that we are comes back into a family or a circumstance, especially when you suffer trauma before, where you haven't come to terms with it, and you need to settle it within your soul. And you need to be around individuals, other souls, who can be compassionate. But I believe this 100%. I've seen experiences in my own personal life, and I believe having the parents that I had and have still, you know, thank God, were very, very loving and accepting and really helped my sister as a young child. It was unbelievable. Blows people away when my mother, you know, recounts and goes through the story. It's very interesting. My sister will, you know, she'll talk about it. She goes, you know, I don't remember what this was going on as a young child. She goes, but when she listens and she said, yeah, like she still has that feeling. It's very compelling conversation this morning. Very.
I
wanted to share.
All right. Thank you very much with that. It happens.
And thank you.
Go ahead.
Too. I think, first of all, that it was so important that your mother did let your sister really talk about that, because I think it's the parents that say, oh no, that's just a fantasy, that keep the child from actually going through that healing process. And I think you're right that most of the children that have feelings of having been someone else before are ones that had a tragic end to their life early, and that's why it's so helpful to have the parents talk about it. I also think it's interesting that you mentioned that your sister now doesn't remember much from it, because I think most of those researchers that have done the research say that usually the child has vivid memories until they're about 5 or 6 years of age, and then at that point they seem to be ready to get on with their new life, and so those memories tend to recede back, and that makes a lot of sense because now they are in a new family and it's time to move on. But thank you so much for sharing that.
You know, Marjorie, with all the work and research that you had, did you have any supporters, scientific supporters, who were like right behind you going, you know, right on?
Well, I should say I had a little bit of both. I definitely had a few of the people in the university, when they discovered that I meditated, actually called me up and said, can we have coffee together, because I want to talk about this too, because I think there are other neuroscientists that are like closet meditators, and it was wonderful to actually then discover these people and talk with them. And I have a very good colleague who has actually written my textbook so well together on giving rehabilitation workshops and writing that textbook, is that we both meditate and we both believe that there is an awareness far beyond what our neurons and our brain are creating. And that really gives you support, as you say, when you have other scientific colleagues that believe in you and are excited when they hear you're writing this book.
Les is in Whittier, California. Hello, Les. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my phone
call.
Sure
thing. You're very welcome.
Twice in 1 week, I'm blessed. Dr. Wildecott, I was wondering, I'm a 5-time stroke survivor, and I have this condition called hemiphoresis. And I was wondering if you would if you could recommend something for it.
Well, I think there are two things I could say. One is that I actually have done research with patients with stroke, and I have found that if you have some movement in your limb, there are physical therapists that actually work with you in what they call sort of a forced use situation, where they try to get you to use that limb as much as possible during the day, because you can begin to get circuits to take over some of the circuits that are no longer working. So that is one particular therapy that's used for patients with stroke. But the main thing is to give yourself as much practice using that limb as you can. They say the more intense the therapy, the better. The more we do it during the day.
I don't have any problem moving it. It's just numb.
It's just numb. Ah. And then, again, I'm not really sure exactly what to say about that. It may be that a lot of the sensory input coming in is no longer really being activated because of some neurons in the brain that have died. But I think that it's good to know that at least you have the motor side of things as well that are being active. But I don't think I can say any more than that without actually seeing you personally.
Do you think Reiki might help?
I would certainly try Reiki. I mean, if it were me, I would go ahead and try energy healing, because it's amazing what can actually work with different people related to a wide variety of illnesses and diseases. So it certainly is worth giving it a try. And I have heard some amazing stories about what Reiki has done for people.
Thank you.
Okay, good luck to you there. Indeed. So what do you do next, Marjorie? What's your next project?
My next project is probably to talk with more people that are in the same place I am about wondering whether our materialist paradigm is really all there is, or whether there might be something more, and share this with people. I imagine that I will be going, for example, in April to the Science of Consciousness Conference to talk to other people there and give a workshop. So I think what I'm shifting now is toward being with what I call more my family of people who are interested in a more expansive understanding of science than I had before. I feel very much at home with those sorts of people.
Chapter 7, of course, Awareness Without a Brain, something we were talking about earlier, is one of my favorites, because that tells you everything you need to know about this, doesn't it?
Yes. Right. I think that, I mean, the idea of awareness without a brain is that idea that basically you can have consciousness without a brain, meaning that you, with reincarnation, you can actually have an awareness between lives, which I think is fascinating.
Next up, let's go to Joe in the Bronx. Here you go, Joe.
Hey,
taking advantage
George.
Of your one call a night, huh?
Thanks. Yes, absolutely. And Tom did get my song, he told me. So I'm
good.
Looking forward to that being played. I wanted to ask Marjorie if she's ever done any experimentation with people who have levitated.
Levitated? That's an interesting question. Margie, have you come across one of those?
I have not myself done any experiments with people who have levitated. However, I do know that one of the people at the University of Virginia in the group there, his name is Michael Grosso, has actually studied this a certain amount in, I believe, a Catholic saint who was said to levitate, and there was a lot of documentation about that. And I would say that it might be worthwhile going to perhaps his website, and I believe he has a book called, I think, Padre Pio, where he actually talks about that, and that would be a worthwhile thing to do. I also should say I have occasionally been to the American Academy of Religion meetings where there have been symposia where they actually show photos of different yogis that look in the photos as if they have levitated, but of course that isn't real proof because we don't know if that was, you know, actually the case or not. But I think that there is evidence out there that that is possible.
Is there an evil side of any of this, Marjorie? I mean, we've talked about a lot of enlightening things, but can some of this be used for the wrong purposes?
That's an interesting question, and I would say that when people meditate and they quiet their minds down, they tend to become much more connected with other people in the world and much less contracted, and therefore they don't want to do anything to harm other people. So my own observations have been that when you meditate, you actually become a much more compassionate human being. And in fact, I think a lot of the Buddhist meditators focus on a compassion-based meditation, which is one of really including everyone in their own awareness and sending them out compassion. So I haven't seen that myself, any meditation used in a negative way.
Tina in Marietta, Georgia. It's your turn, Tina. Go ahead.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I was calling because I've lost both my parents this year, and
sorry to hear that.
They're elderly, but I was very close. I'm an only child. So, like, everything about us was with them,
yeah.
And now it's with me. I do have children, but all our memories are me and them, and I don't have them. And actually, the military music really got me big time because Daddy loved that music. And this time last year, I actually recorded it on my phone and let him listen to it.
Did he serve? Was there a branch he served in?
He's Air Force.
Air Force.
38 years.
Beautiful.
Actually, it was Army and Air Force. He got in Army, then Air Force, because it changed over. But anyway, I did have a dream with my mom. She died in March. Daddy was still with me. Actually, we thought Daddy would go, and I didn't know Mama. It's a long story, but... but then she came. I was sleeping on the couch near him. He had a hospital bed in there. I took care of him. And I had this, like, swirling warmness around me, comforting swirling around my body. And my mother has an accent, and a beautiful Spanish accent.
Hold on for a second, Tina. We're at the break, and I want to hold you over, so we'll come right back to you. On our next Coast to Coast program, David Pilates joins us as we talk about more disappearances in parks. What an amazing story. And by the way, if you want to watch my interview with David on Beyond Belief, you simply go to the website, beyondbelief.com, 99 cents for the first 30 days to watch not only that program, but all of them, 99 cents at beyondbelief.com. And welcome back with Marjorie Woollacott and her book, Infinite Awareness. And let's go back to Tina in Marietta, Georgia. Tina, welcome to the show. And let's let you get into that again. Go ahead.
Hi. I just said that I had a dream, and it was I was very comfortable, and I had this warm swirling around me. It was just swirling. but then I hadn't heard my mother's voice since before she died. We had it on a video, but I couldn't listen or see her at all. I couldn't see anything, or I didn't want to hear anything. And so that was the first time I heard my mom's voice again. And she has a Spanish voice. Her voice is more from the Spain.
Mm-hmm. Accent. That kind of dialect, sure.
Yeah, so it's very, a little more unique to me. It's a beautiful voice. And so she just said, Tina, you and Stanley. And that was all I heard. I didn't know what, she didn't say anything else. And I didn't know what to make of it. I was comfortable and I felt better because I heard her voice. And I just, with all this talk about possible reincarnation and all that, you know, I believe in the Bible, and my dad was baptized like a week after my mother died at 85. And I want them, and I want, you know, everything is.
Well, are you a believer, Tina, that the other side exists?
Yeah, I do, because the Bible has it says things you can't imagine, you know.
But do you have any doubts?
I want to believe, and I want to believe in.
Well, it sounds like you have some doubts.
I don't have any doubts. I just want to. I just want to understand how it all forms together.
That's the interesting part. And Marjorie, I'll bring you in on this. I don't think we can answer that. We don't know how it comes together, do we? Margie, you there?
I'm there. And okay. I think what I would also say, Tina, is that I have heard of, again, many cases where people who have gone to the other side have come back to their loved ones and communicated with them in one way or another. And I think that's a beautiful example of what your mother said to you, that she was right there with you wanting to let you know how much she loved you. And I think that people also mention that those beings are often around us all the time, but we can't see them. So that your mother or your father actually may be around you and you're not even aware of them, but their presence is there. Sometimes you can feel it just with this wonderful feeling, sort of as you were describing in that moment that you had that experience. I had the same sort of thing happen to me with a woman who was an energy healer who mentioned that my two parents, who had also passed away, came into the room and they gave me these wonderful loving messages about how much they loved me. And I felt totally loved by them in that moment, and yet I hadn't been aware. I had to have the communicator like tell me that, because she was more of an intuitive than I was. So I say treasure that moment that your mother did communicate with you. That is so wonderful.
I mean, I think we can honestly say and accurately say that it exists. There's something there. We may not know how and why, but it's there.
Yes.
Is that pretty accurate?
Absolutely.
Marjorie, the book itself, Infinite Awareness, where do people get it? Because I think it's almost fresh off the press, isn't it?
Right. At Amazon, of course, you can get it. And also Roman and Littlefield is a publisher. You can get it directly from them. But Amazon.com is the easiest way of getting it.
Okay, let's go back to final calls now. East of the Rockies, David in Memphis, Tennessee. Hi, David. Good morning.
Good morning, George. Excellent show.
Thank you, sir.
I'm actually a first-time caller.
Oh, great. Good.
Dr. Marjorie, I have tried to meditate over the years. The one frustrating part, at least for me, is I can't seem to, when I meditate, or at least attempt to, I always somehow fall asleep. And I was just wondering if there is, like, a way to get past that block so I can actually meditate and without actually sleeping.
And I think that's a wonderful question that a lot of people have, so you are not the only one. And I have two things to say about that. One is that very often when people go into a state where they're not really conscious. They're not like aware. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are in their usual sleep state. Some people come out of that state and they find that they actually feel more energized at the end of it. They don't feel that sort of sleepy grogginess that they often have when they go to sleep. So I wouldn't say that you're absolutely falling asleep every time. But saying that, I know that I went through a period in my own meditations where I was also like losing consciousness and it felt like sleep. And I realized it was because I was staying up late at night and I wasn't giving myself enough time to sleep so that in my meditation I tended to go out. And they often say there's this very interesting razor's edge between having your mind be too active in meditation and falling asleep. So I'd say try being sure you're getting enough sleep and then see if you can just try to meditate even for 5 or 10 minutes and see if you can keep that razor's edge point of keeping the mind quiet, focused on the breath, and then if you notice yourself nodding off, bringing your awareness back again to your breath.
Marjorie, why do you think most scientists, neuroscientists, scientists in general, are opposed to this or resistant to this?
I think that it's something that I notice in myself, and that is that there's a fear that comes up when your major paradigm about your world view is being threatened by someone saying that it may not be that way. And we scientists have had this Newtonian, materialistic, mechanistic world view for the last 300 years, and it's embedded in every aspect of our science. When I write a grant proposal, they want to know how I'm going to show the mechanisms that underlie why a child has problems when they have cerebral palsy. They always want me to look at this in a very materialistic way. And so when we try to say that there's more to consciousness, there's more to awareness than just our physical body, it is a very frightening thing to have your worldview rocked in a certain sense. And so there's a very interesting scientist named Thomas Kuhn, a philosopher of science, who said that this is typical with any paradigm shift that ever happens in the world, that for a while we keep trying to say that everything that's an anomaly is an artifact and we simply won't believe it. And then at a certain point there gets to be enough evidence that finally we can't do that anymore and someone comes up with a new worldview or a new paradigm or a new theory that explains things now in a much broader way, and then we go to that. So I'm hoping that in the future this may actually happen related to science and consciousness.
Me too. Me too. Maybe we'll get there. A little bit at a time, inches, baby steps, but we'll get there, won't we?
Yes.
Simon is in Seattle, Washington, west of the Rockies. Simon, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing, sir.
I just want to share my story of my best friend. His name is Michael. I am from an East African country called Eritrea, and mm-hmm. he's the same. So our country is led by dictatorship, and we can't leave the country. They don't give us exit visa. We have to go like walk for like 3, 4, 5 days, sometimes for hours. We have to be in hiding and stuff. Otherwise, we would be killed right away. Oh, yes. Or we will stay in underground jails for like years and years. And there is no access to the court system. You don't see a judge, nothing.
How did you make it to Seattle, Simon?
The same way. I left the country like for days and days. I have to be in hiding.
Good for you.
The first time
Smart.
I was caught, and I was lucky. They didn't kill me.
You still have family? Family still back there?
Yes, I do.
All right, that's sad. But anyways, go ahead.
Yeah. My best friend, Michael, and my other friend, they were leaving the country the same way. So my best friend, his family members, like his kids and his wife, were in other country about 1,000 miles away. And he was caught, and my other friend, both of them were caught, and they were beating them really bad, really bad, at nighttime. And what happened was his son was 4 years old at the time. This is like before 6 or 7 years. And he was with his mom, like I said, in other country. And at that time, he woke up and he woke up his mom and he said, "Oh my God, they're kicking my dad! Oh my God, my dad, my dad!" He was screaming, and his mom's like, "No, go back to bed."
He knew it.
What
he
are you doing?
He could feel.
Oh yeah. So how did that happen? That's That's the question. How was he able?
It's almost like remote viewing, Simon. Did you look at that area at all, Marjorie, remote viewing?
I did. I love that research. It's not actually in my book, but it's the fact that we literally can tap into this non-local consciousness and we can see things that are far, far away from us, just like you were saying that boy was able to experience himself. And I think that it's as if the membrane that keeps our brain from having broader awareness somehow becomes more permeable, especially when something is happening to a relative who we love. And somehow we open up and we can actually experience that at a very different level. I totally believe what you're saying that he experienced. And again, there are many, many cases of others that have had the same thing when a relative is in distress. We instantly connect to them across miles and miles of distance.
Marjorie's website, of course, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It is her name, marjoriewollicott.com, C-O-T-T. And interesting. What is that, by the way? English?
It is Old English. Most people changed it to Walcott when they came to the United States, but in this case, it kept all of the Old English double letters.
That's very rare.
Very rare.
Double letters next to each other, two sets. Let's go back to the calls. Let's go to John in Loma Linda, California, on the wild card line. John, go ahead, sir.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
You tell me. You're on.
Hey, cool. First time caller, long time listener.
Great, thank you.
Cool. I have a question for your guest.
Okay.
All right. I was wondering if she would recommend hypnosis for someone that had a encounter of the fourth kind.
Okay, I would suggest some kind of past life regression or hypnotherapy. You would probably say yes, Marjorie. I would.
Yes, I absolutely would. I think that there are so many studies about hypnosis that really show that you can very often have this regression back into, for example, a previous life during the hypnosis session. So I would say to try to find a very good hypnotist and let yourself see what comes up for you.
We've got Dr. Bruce Goldberg in California. John, is this about you or somebody else?
Pardon me?
Is this about you? Were you part of this fourth encounter? Or
No, it's about me. It happened to me when I was living up in Northern California. What happened was I walked outside. Something kind of told me to go outside. And walked outside and looked up, and 20 feet above my head was an orb of light just floating, going about 2 miles per hour. Okay, so that happened one night. The next night, I walked outside around the same time, and there was a craft in the shape of a triangle.
Wow.
With three lights, you know, each corner. And then in the middle, it had a huge red light that would flash on and off. And that one was about the same height, defying all laws of gravity, just floating, going about 2 or 3 miles per hour. Pardon me?
Did they take you?
I don't know. Both times I was asleep and I woke up and I walked outside and I noticed a few things outside.
See, a lot of times that's how that happens in interesting work. Marjorie, I want to thank you for being on the program and you keep in touch with us. I have a feeling, you know, I love scientists who are into this and understand it. And good luck and congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
That's Marjorie Woollacott. Her book is called Infinite Awareness. Her website is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. I want to thank all of you who participated in our Veterans Day program as well. Next time you see one of our military types somewhere at the airport or anywhere in uniform, little handshake, little salute goes a long, long way. For Nathan Staten, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, David Hines, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Timothy Banal, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.